Blog Talk Radio.
And bang, we're on. This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to the Sunday night Friday episode of Scary Cast. We're very fortunate tonight. We've got a wonderful guest. He's a musician like I am, and that's what makes it the most fun. I like talking to musicians. We have a great time. We were having a good time just early, right before the show, chatting about some things like that. We've got Brandon Dalo. Now, Brandon is a fantastic composer, and he does work for Small Town Monsters. That's the documentary series with Seth Breedlove. Good evening, kind sir. How are you doing tonight, Brandon?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We've been having a good time talking about being musicians and all this kind of stuff. I actually, so that everyone knows, like a lot of my guests, I kind of run into them on Facebook. For all the bad people claim, Facebook does send me good candidates for friends. And so I said, I sent you a request, and then you replied, and then we started talking, and I found out that you are a musician and you do work with Seth. And then you found out that I run a podcast or two or three. And so we started talking. We decided we'd come on here and just have a great time. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the way life really needs to be. This is, as most folks know, it's just a conversation. We have a good time and we talk about things. We might even create things together while we're on here. We did that this past week with Space, with the Space Expo up in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. Had a lot of great ideas come out of that, and we're working on them. So anyway, you are, I will get you started, and then I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself. From what everybody should know, you are a native of Ohio. You have moved to Southern California, the home of the film industry.
Yeah.
Whether Atlanta
That's
wants
right.
to admit it or not, you are in the home of the film industry. And so tell us a little bit about you, the Ohio chapter of your life, and how in the heck did you get into Southern California?
For sure, yeah. It's a long story. To kind of shorten it up, I did a lot of kind of touring when I was younger, you know, in bands and that kind of thing. And then producing for a while, producing bands and artists. And then I kind of, quote unquote, discovered film music back in around 2008, 2010. A lot of movies were coming out at the time, like The Dark Knight Trilogy, Inception, the movie 300, and these scores were just popping out at me like I'd never kind of heard before with film music. I never, like, everyone background, I didn't really pay attention to it, you know, didn't even really realize there was a person behind that kind of thing, you know. And then I started hearing these scores from composers like Hans Zimmer and Tyler Bates and these guys, and started becoming fascinated with film music. And I think one of the big things was in bands, you kind of have to stick to a similar sound. You can evolve your sound a little bit album to album, but you kind of stuck in a certain thing, and that kind of limits creativity in a way. Every project is a group of people you're working with, your team. It's a different story that you have to write to, different instrumentation, different musicians you're working with. So I got really excited about that possibility, and I started working to try for, you know, people who are just starting out in film music. That's the biggest question, is how do you get your first job, you know? And the reason,
all right,
you
answer
know,
the
you
question, Brandon.
Through,
yeah. How in the heck do you get your first job in the film business doing music? That's a question I've always wanted answered. We're all ears. Okay?
Yeah, it's a great question, man. It's always, you know, it's always like it's a luck thing. It's a hard work and perseverance thing. For me, it happened completely by random. It's funny because this is the scary. It's Bigfoot is kind of the reason I got my first job with Small Town Monsters. It's kind of the weirdest story, but to tell it real short, my dad had an experience. He was a kid. He heard some really crazy vocalizations that went. And I started getting interested in these paranormal subjects when I was young, and I found this website that had purported Bigfoot vocalization recordings. And I found one that sounded just like what my dad described. I was like, hey, is this kind of what you heard? And he's like, I got goosebumps. And he goes, that's exactly what I heard. And I wrote about his whole experience on a website somewhere. And then fast forward like 10 years later, Seth Breedlove, he's doing a book series, was like, hey, can I use your account in my book? And I'm like, sure. He's like, hey, check out my podcast I'm doing. By the way, you know, a couple weeks later, he was going to turn the book into a documentary series. He's like, come hang out with us. We're shooting down Minerva. And, you know, to compress all a long story short, soon I was like, wait, this could be my opportunity. I asked him, I sent him a text. I was like, hey. And he's like, we were just going to use royalty-free stuff. Like, we didn't really, you know, even think about that. And I was like, no, you got to let me do an original score. It's going to be so much better. And I sent him some demos, and he seemed to really like them, and hired from there. And I've been doing the series. I've now done I just finished my 8th film with them. So we're going to be starting pre-production on the 9th one now. So to answer the question, to me, it was like a sequence of events that kind of happened that was total luck and proximity to where he lived and where I lived. I think it's a little bit different, you know.
That's great. This is like how everything that I've done has happened. I mean, I wanted to be, when I was 15 years old, I wanted to be in the middle of the paranormal world. That's all I ever wanted to do. And try as I might, you had to go to college, you had to get the job, you had to do the 9-to-5. It was just, you know, it was pretty depressing. Then I became
right.
a college professor, and that became pretty depressing too. And I still wanted to be the center of the paranormal universe. That's what I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened, I don't know what happened. I think I found Bigfoot, actually.
Really?
Bigfoot found me. We were doing a podcast. A buddy of mine had suggested that I have this fellow on named Bill Lancaster. He was doing a documentary on Bigfoot. Or the people around.
Okay, I've heard that name before.
And I said, oh, that's great. I said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll have him on there. And then something magical happened. He said that, well, in about 90 days, we have the 50th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage. And that was going to be October the 20th, 2017. So we're on the podcast. I got my three hosts and Bill and me. So I'm sitting there and I go online and I register BigfootDay.com and I put in an application to have an event up at Bays Mountain Park in Kingsport, Tennessee. And then all of a sudden, you know,
yeah.
So there's a lull in the conversation. I said, guess what, folks? I'm here to announce we're going to have the first annual Bigfoot Day in Kingsport, Tennessee on October the 20th to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage. And buddy, it has not stopped since then. It's like I don't know what came over me. It just happened. And then came the Lizard Man Festival, and then that's how I met Lyle Blackburn. Lyle's just a super guy. He's been on my show a couple times.
Yeah,
he came
great,
here
man.
For the first Lizard Man Festival. But that's kind of, you know what? I think we both have about the same story.
We had to make it
happen, didn't we?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's. And that's the thing. That's one of the things I know. If you listen to these kind of studies that they do of people who are super successful in the industries or finance or whatever, it's like, you know, they've interviewed them and they check out their character traits, and all of them have that one trait in common. Especially in an industry like the film world or the entertainment industry, or in what you're doing, you know, because it's in both cases, I would assume, you know, when you start off, you're not making much of anything in terms of money.
Yeah.
And you're following your passion, you have to make so many sacrifices to kind of make that happen. And most people aren't willing to do that. There's a lot of the investigators, you know, even in the paranormal world, I'm sure you're aware of all of them. Lyle's one of them. He's killing the game, you know. He's doing amazing. And his TV appearances and working with SCM and everything else he's doing. But it's like you and I were, you were just saying about the kind of the office cubicle zombie, you know, typical path, you know, somebody Lyle. Create, you know, with his band and then all of his books and everything, he's doing what he wants to do, you know. Same thing with Seth Breedlove from Small Town Monsters. He's now, it's been at least a year, maybe 2 years, where he's not working full-time gig, and it's so inspiring to see that, you know.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's hard to do. But there really isn't a formula for it. You have to find the opportunity. You have to make the opportunity work. and then you have to keep on regardless of the sacrifice. And I can tell you there have been sacrifices. I'll bet Brandon Dalo has had sacrifices, haven't you?
That's true. Yeah, 100%, man. And that's, you know, coming to California, to kind of continue the answer for you, your earlier question, it's like, for me, it was the once Small Town Monster started taking off, because that was, you know, those, that was my beginning experience, really, the first three or four films there before I decided to move to Los Angeles. And I think, and we can talk about, you know, each one or whatever you want to talk about. Well, we did The Mothman of Point Pleasant back in 2016. That one did, it was super successful. You know, each film grows exponentially from the last in the series, but Mothman was kind of the bestseller at the time, you know, topped the Amazon charts and all that stuff. And it gave me a lot of confidence, I think. And also kind of critically, the music was, seemed that people really, really enjoying it and stuff. And it gave me the confidence to come out here and kind of pursue this. But, you know, you're, it's like what you're describing, you're working your whole life, you know, the comfort, finances. I moved from a two-story, two-bedroom house with a garage in Ohio, you know, where I was paying not that much comparatively. And then I come here and I'm living in this crap apartment, you know. And but it's, yeah, all, it's all worth it if you really want.
Yeah, if you want to. If you want, I tell you what, you're fading a little bit in and out on us.
Okay.
You're there.
Yeah, your you're fading a little bit too.
Yeah, we're all, I guess we're all part of the digital world and we all have problems. But yeah, I certainly understand that. But you know, you have to do that. Especially, haven't you found that projects tend to find you? You see them, understand them, then you have to go and do it. Like I'm working with. Let me see how much of this I can say. We're putting together two sets of seminars, both at academic institutions and both about Bigfoot. Now, a number of people that I've talked to say you're actually going to academic institution. One is an R100, top 100 university in America, and you're going to do a set of seminars on Bigfoot. And I said, absolutely. Absolutely, and we got the thing worked out, and with a technical college. And, I mean, we've moved Bigfoot up to another level because probably heretofore Bigfoot hasn't gotten into the university system. But Bigfoot is coming along with me, and we're getting Bigfoot there. And it's going to be a boatload of work and getting the speakers set up and everything and get the artists and everything. But so far, everybody is on board with this. They're thrilled.
That's
and
cool.
Both of the one university and one technical college, they both keep really hounding me about, we've got people that want to know more about this. They want to buy tickets and come to the event. And it just makes me smile, you know? It's like all of a sudden this thing is taking off. You're coming at it from the film and scoring aspect. I'm coming at it from the conference aspect. We're really doing the same thing. We're both promoting the paranormal world. Aren't we? Did I say something wrong, or did I get it right? Yeah, good.
No, yeah, definitely. And you know what's cool about that? I think, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, you know, it's interesting about, you know, the kind of the Bigfoot world, because, you know, I'm a big Bigfoot fan, if you will. And, you know, just growing up and seeing kind of the progression, you know, I'm sure shows like Finding Bigfoot and that kind of thing have kind of brought it more mainstream. And the internet, of course, has caused it to be, but you see this progression. In fact, like Seth just did On the Trail of Bigfoot. I don't know if you saw that come out. He's doing a new kind of a mini series, like a TV mini series instead of the traditional documentary format, where it's more of an investigative approach. And we just had the premiere in Ohio recently, within the last couple of months. And, you know, we show like all of our movies in Ohio at this one particular theater. And the On the Trail of Bigfoot was the biggest turnout we've had in a really long time. I mean, the place was like completely packed. And I think we were trying to figure out what's the draw, the difference in the different movies and stuff. And it's like, maybe it's Bigfoot in the name, you know? Seems like a lot of people are really into the subject now, which is cool. It's cool that a lot of the stigma seems to be leaving it.
Yeah, and it's funny you talk about you had a packed house. Well, I just had the George Bigfoot Conference 3 weekends ago. The thing sold out 3 times. We had tickets. Wow. We sold them out. We added more tickets. We sold them out. We added a second venue. We sold them out. And, I mean, it was amazing. And I can go ahead and say that the Fall Georgia Bigfoot Conference, you know, here we are going to be 7 months out. I've already sold $800 worth of tickets for a fall, for an October event, and people are so excited. And I'm really thrilled that they are, because I am too. I will share with you just a little bit, because you might not know a lot about the location where we're doing the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. It's in Clayton, Georgia.
Yeah.
It's the very northeast county in Georgia. And what's interesting is it has a ton of Bigfoot sightings. It has a ton of UFO sightings. It has more psychics per square inch than I've ever seen. And they're real. They're not joke. They're real psychics. I've talked to them. And they've got right across the state line, which is maybe 10 minutes away, in Otto, North Carolina, they have a fairy labyrinth. It's a stone circular labyrinth that they built. And there are plenty of pictures of fairies and elves. And then I went up there with, have you ever heard of Squatchman?
Squatchman?
His name is Squatchman. That's Greg Yost. He's real well known. He's from Indiana. His son went up there, you know, came down there with me before the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And we went up to the fairy labyrinth, and we have pictures of Bigfoot tracks. We have pictures of things peering around trees, and we have pictures of a lot of stick structures. So, I mean, that place, that Clayton, Georgia area, Rabun County up to Otto, North Carolina, is absolutely magical. And I seem to have found a number of really well-known artists in Georgia that come from Clayton and are, in fact, I'm meeting with two of them Tuesday morning. We're plotting and planning a really neat project. I'll fill you in on this later. But we're plotting and planning a project. And the whole point is they really believe that Rabun County, Georgia, is the center of the universe, kind of like I believe not only Rabun County, but Sedona, and which is, you know, on a ley line, and also Mount Shasta.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are certain magical areas in this world, and I found, I guess I'm the first one to find it and publicize it, certainly not the first one to find it, but I'm publicizing it, and I've got the backing of the Chamber of Commerce, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the county, the city. I've got so much backing because they want their county to be known as this magical place, because it is.
That's cool.
And
you know what's really –
and I think you –
sorry.
What? Please. What?
No, I was just going to say, I think it's – you know what's really cool about that is that another thing that we've seen doing this series is kind of, again, the progression of small towns. And one of the missions kind of that Seth's always talked about and we've always kind of had with these movies – is there's a lot of these small towns who are kind of failing financially. You know, the downtown areas are kind of going under and that kind of thing. It's a big theme in the newest film that we did, Terror in the Skies, that comes out here in June 7th. But, you know, kind of the death of the Midwest kind of thing. But what we're seeing, though, what we try to do by documenting that history and then publicizing it, we're hoping that a lot of these small towns will kind of embrace their local monster. Because a lot of them don't, you know, they shun it away kind of thing. Perfect example of kind of the opposite of that is, you know, the Point Pleasant with the Mothman. You know, they have the Mothman Museum now, and they have the giant Mothman Festival every year. And it brings so much, you know, tourism and life and money into that small community. And we're hoping that other small towns will kind of follow suit. You know, same thing with like Minerva, Ohio. We did the Minerva Monster movie there. And it was amazing to see kind of the town. They did interviews on the street with people to see kind of what, you know, people who lived in the town thought of the case. And no one really knew what we were talking about. And then we did the movie, and it blew up. And the town totally embraced it. And it's changed, you know, same thing in Whitehall, New York. And I guess what I'm trying to say is it's cool to see the place you're talking about and saying, hey, we want to make this a thing. We want our town to be known for this. It's Seth is, I believe he's called it, crypto tourism. You know, it's a cool thing that towns should start embracing.
It is, and it's wonderful when they do, and it's a very sad case when they don't, because I have worked with a town that absolutely abhors the fact that they have a monster.
Yeah,
they turned on me. And I mean, I've never seen anything like it. They're embarrassed. I got to tell you, and this is a horrible thing to say, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. A buddy of mine who's a very smart guy, he said, well, do they want to be known for the home of a really cool monster and have lots of tourism? Or do they want to be known for the lowest commercial rent rates in the state?
Right.
And
yeah,
it's
true.
Like,
I mean,
and apparently they want to be known for the lowest commercial rent rates in the state. And I think it is interesting because you guys have had some very positive results. I've had positive and negative. I guess it just depends where you go. I'll never say where the negative is. No, nobody actually would ever believe it. But the point is, people got to realize that history is history. You cannot change what happened. Can you?
Right. No. Good. That's another – what's important, I think, also in the same line, and it's another reason why I really appreciate the reason what Seth is doing and the team is you know, you have some of these stories that are on risk of being lost forever, some of these kind of historical cases, because a lot of the stuff happened in the 70s or the 80s, and some of the people that were involved are passing away. You know, we had a case – we did a movie called Beast of Whitehall a couple years ago about a Bigfoot incident up in the upstate New York, and we finished our first movie. We had the premiere. The day of the premiere, we announced we were going to do Whitehall next, and then the key player in that case, one, you know, the key witness passed away literally the same day. So we thought, wow, this is crazy, where we were just about to tell this story, you know. And so luckily his brother was still alive, and he was involved in the case as well, so we could bring him on. We could bring some of the original investigators that were involved, and we were able to put that story down. Because I remember when Seth originally kind of told me about the story, I thought, let me do a little bit more research, and I Googled it, and there really wasn't that much out there. So part of the aim or the mission with the series is to document some of these small town cases that may, you know, go by the wayside if no one documents them. You know, and that's kind of one of the things we try to do. We've always kind of prided ourselves on, I guess, is unlike some of the other entertainment in this world, in this vein, you know, we try to let the witnesses tell their own story and focus on kind of the human being element, more in the small town element, how they're affected more than kind of just, oh, let's just put a flashlight up to our face and tell the spooky story. You know, we have kind of this deeper meaning sometimes. But it's cool, though, because it seems like, you know, there's parallels with what we're doing and what you're doing. So that's cool to hear.
I mean, I think the more people that are doing this, the better. I mean, I truly invite people to start investigating these things. There are several things around the country that I want to get to, and I want to try to investigate it. I think the most important thing, and you touched on it just a minute ago, you got to find the right person that has the story. And that's the most important thing. You got to find that right person. You've got to get it down, and you've got to turn that story into something visual that people can really understand.
Yeah, 100%. We did. It reminds me of, I just mentioned the Minerva Monster case, and the Caton family is kind of at the center of that case. It was a family in the 70s who had this creature living behind their home in the woods, behind their home, and having these frequent encounters with it. And we did a movie about that one, but what was crazy was the Caton family was completely closed off to interacting with anyone. They had, you know, these big offers from TV networks and stuff to come on and do these little things. And they always turned everybody down. And then here comes Seth, you know, and somehow got him able to talk to us. And, you know, and just having him, none of the other family members really wanted to come on, but just having Howie was so crucial, you know, to your point. It's like, a lot of the entertainment now, I think what sets us apart a little bit is they don't really care to have the real person all the time or to show the real locations. You know, you can do a lot of dramatization with actors and stuff like that. And, you know, for us, it's extremely important. It's just to hear it from the person that had this happen to or the people, you know, and actually give them a platform to tell their story without editing it all up and having these little tiny snippets and stuff. You know, it's a real kind of honest look at, okay, what really happened here. And it's also too, like, For me, it's if I was going to investigate this thing on my own, like if I was just going to, if I was interested in the Mothman or whatever, and I was going to drive down there, what would I want to see? And for me, a lot of times I like to, I don't know about you, but I like to see the locations where this stuff happened for some reason. That obviously it's not going to still be sitting there, but there's something important, I feel like, in being in the area and kind of taking it in. So we try to do that in our films too. We show the real locations. It's not just a, you know, some shot of a random field or something, you know?
Exactly. Now, in terms of the Mothman, because Mothman is one of my favorites, you have read John Keel's book, right?
Yes, I did, yeah.
That book is frightening. It is truly a frightening book. I thought when I read Dracula back when I was in high school that that was the most frightening book I'd ever read because it was real. Bram Stoker did a great job, but I think John Keel for this past century did one of the best jobs in his descriptions of the Men in Black and the phone calls and that crummy motel. Oh my God. I think John Keel deserved a Pulitzer Prize for that, even though we know that one would never be given for a paranormal event. But
Definitely.
What do you think about the Mothman? Mothman's one of my favorite topics for several reasons. But what do you think about the Mothman? What's your take on the Mothman itself?
Well, the Mothman, you know, it's interesting because it's one of my favorites too. It's got to be up there, probably my top one or two favorite legends of all time, because it's got, as you were saying, it's got this conglomeration of all these different activity. You've got the kind of one of the original Men in Black cases. You've got the UFOs in the area, Mothman creature. I loved scoring this film. In fact, you know, when I was scoring it, I was still living in Ohio, and I was only about, I don't know, maybe a 4-hour drive or something. I forget exactly to Point Pleasant where this all took place. And I did so much research because I was so fascinated. I would literally every weekend just drive down to the TNT area where people were seeing this creature back in the 60s and stuff, and go back up in there and going to the town and just soaking it all in. You know, it's a fascinating encounter, but what really appealed to me and what I tried to translate in the music was this idea that it was trying to communicate to the people that there was this upcoming disaster with the bridge collapse, you know, when the Silver Bridge collapsed in real life and a number of people's lives were lost. And so I, you know, and of course a lot of people are like, well, it probably doesn't have anything to do with anything, you know, but it's, for me, I gravitated towards that kind of story and point of view. And it kind of, for me, there was this sadness kind of emanating from this creature, this harbinger of doom, whatever you want to say. And, you know, because the sightings basically stopped when the bridge collapsed. So people try to, you know, put them together. But, I don't know exactly what to think in terms of if it really happened. I think something absolutely happened to the original kids, and a lot of people were seeing something in there. And, you know, what it is, I have no idea. But, you know, what's interesting about John Keel and you were mentioning him, and I used a lot of that stuff in the music as well, where, you know, he was talking about he would have these phone calls where he would just hear weird beeps and noises and stuff on the other line.
Yeah.
And then people were stealing his mail, and they were like these phantom photographers. Like people would just shoot photos and run away, and just like weird stuff that was going on. And it was interesting because I was able to use, I took that as a concept, and the cue where we show the Men in Black, we talk about them. I actually have like weird ambience with, you know, beeps and sounds and stuff like that, like he was hearing in the film. So that was a lot of cool, fun to experiment with. But yeah, man, I think Mothman's one of my favorites, and we're doing a sequel to the Mothman of Point Pleasant. It's the first ever Small Town Monster sequel. It's going to be called Mothman Legacy, and I believe we're filming it next year. So we're going to kind of go into
the
kind of ancillary stuff we didn't get to talk about in the first one. Yeah.
Well, I will put a little carrot out there to you. I have an interview.
Sure.
I've never published it. I have an interview with the last car over the Silver Bridge.
Oh, really?
There was a lady. Her father was a kind of a Bible thumping minister that went around West Virginia, and they were the last car over the Silver Bridge before it collapsed.
Jeez.
And it's an amazing interview because of what all they were talking about was going on, all the electricity that was going. In other words, it seems to me, from what she told me, that her son is a very good friend of mine. And it doesn't seem like the bridge collapse was all natural, if
right.
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
seems like there might have been something about it that was not natural.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of
and,
theories. You know, people were seen. There was, I believe, that some people claim to see, like, two men dressed in black on the bridge the day before, and there's stories of Mothman being seen perched up on the bridge and that kind of thing.
Right.
It's,
oh, yeah, Mothman
crazy...
perched on the bridge for sure. But the whole fact is there was so much electricity going around that bridge that couldn't have been natural. Now, I've got some folks that I'm going to be talking about and probably in the next couple of weeks on ScaryCast, but I'm going to be talking with them about that particular fact that there is something not natural about the collapse of the Silver Bridge. And, you know, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, though, that it's interesting because when you do these movies and stuff, especially – I'm not always able to be on location with the guys, you know, because I'm out here in L.A., but like right now they're filming the latest one, which is going to be Momo, the Missouri Monster. So they're filming that
mm-hmm.
now. So I'm not on location with them. But when I'm able to, and I talk to these people, and I'm in the town and all this stuff, you start to kind of get it. And I'm sure you've probably had a similar experience when you're investigating. You almost get a connection to the town in a way, and the story. And it's interesting to do a film like this, especially as a musician, because I have to really embody the psychology of what's happening in the story and then bring that out emotionally in the music. So I have to really kind of live that story for a while. And the Mothman, you know, you especially with the bridge collapse and all that, we had just a quick story. We had the premiere. We had like a VIP premiere down in Point Pleasant at the Low Hotel. And it was just for like the town and the, you know, people who own the museum there and Walmsley's and stuff. And we watched the movie and everybody was crying afterwards because in the movie there's Jeff Walmsley, actually his dad, he's the owner of the Mothman Museum. His dad had filmed like the day after the bridge collapse. And then that film had never been released publicly up until our movie. So, you know, Seth, he finally trusted Seth to actually have the footage finally. And he had done all these other TV shows. That's another amazing thing about Seth Breedlove. It's like people, you know, trust him and he's proven he can, you know, he respects everybody in that way. But so we had this incredible footage of the collapse and it was, you know, pulling out the cars and all that stuff. And it was, we included a lot of it in the movies. If people want to see it, they can check it out. But so, you know, after the premiere, everybody from the town was crying and it was kind of a big emotional thing. And then we showed it a couple of weeks later at the Mothman Festival for the public. And at the, I think it's called the State Theater there. It's the old theater downtown there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Afterwards, somebody told us that, you know, after the bridge collapsed, it's only maybe a quarter mile. It's super close to where the collapse was on the river there. And they said that after the bridge collapsed, they stored the bodies in the State Theater, you know, and had the air conditioning on and that kind of thing while they were trying to figure out, you know, it was just chaotic.
Oh my.
So it was just this really, yeah, it was this really emotional moment of like, you know, here we are showing this movie to the town. And the town seems to really embrace it, you know, we seem to have done them right in that way, you know. We're hearing this, we're showing it in this theater where that happened, we're super close to this. And, you know, you have these little experiences when you film and you kind of gain this connection to the story in a weird way. I'm sure you've had similar experiences when you investigate stuff like that.
Well, you better believe it, like especially in Clayton, Georgia. And I got to tell this very quick story. It's like I'm standing in the library,
yeah,
and there's this older
mm-hmm.
gentleman. He's about 80 years old. He comes walking up to me, and he says, "Talked before and this and this and this." And I thought, now I've never seen you in my life. And I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around and looked at Stephanie, my friend, who's the head librarian, and she's smiling and she's nodding. It's like, yeah, talk to him. And he gave me a couple of stories that I would never have guessed. And that's part of what I'm doing. I have a blank spot on my calendar on Tuesday afternoon. Nobody will know where I'm going to be. You know that deal, right? Nobody needs to know where you're going
yeah.
to be and what you're doing. But
exactly.
you got
yeah.
there's something there's a man that I have to meet, and he's going to show me some things. But he approached me, and I'd never met him ever, but he knew who I was. He said, "You're the man that's doing Bigfoot." I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And you know, it's a lot of fun when you start getting some notoriety in that people trust you. I'm not out. I'm out to tell a story. If there's a story there, if there's not a story there, we're going to have a great time anyway. But a number of people in Clayton, Georgia, and I'm experiencing that. It's just wonderful. I mean, I have the best time when I go there. I really can't afford to go there the next 3 days. I have events around here that I need to be promoting and everything, but I'm going to go because I need to go. I just need to go to Clayton, Georgia. And I think it's very important to me, and some good things always happen when I go to that town. And I think you probably understand that when you do research, when you go to places, if it's good and it's what you're supposed to be doing, good things tend to happen to you, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had a lot of those kind of experiences too, where it's real bizarre to be, you know, because I'm a fan of the stuff. If I wasn't doing the series, I'd be watching it, you know, and because I love these kind of stories and that kind of thing. But like I said, when we go on location, it's weird to like to read about a legend, and it's just, you know, it's just a print thing, and it's kind of like exists in a bubble or whatever, you know. And then when we go and kind of investigate, we do the film and stuff, we're meeting these people, and you go inside the bubble and you're kind of interacting inside this legend. It's a real kind of strange feeling, but it's also really rewarding too. We've had amazing experiences with witnesses, like, you know, just all kinds of things. Like when we were down in Arkansas, we did the Boggy Creek movie. We were interviewing Terry Sutton, who had an amazing experience down there. And we're back in his pond and we're interviewing him and that kind of thing. And then the little things like really help, really kind of affect you in weird ways you wouldn't expect. You know, his mom made us this giant spread of a lunch, and we had to get somewhere. We had interviews we had to do, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, no, we're staying for this Southern hospitality in the middle of nowhere. You know, we're going to eat this lunch. Just little things like this, but then you'll have big things too. Like the same movie, we had the Crabtree family. They're integral to the Boggy Creek case, and they were featured in the Legend of Boggy Creek, Charles B. Pierce film. And after that film came out in the 70s, no one's been allowed back on the Crabtree property to film. And we get down there to Falk, Arkansas, to go film the movie, like what really happened with the Boggy Creek case. And we're in the Monster Mart, which is this kind of convenience store / museum in Falk. And there's, you know, it's a very small town. And we get up in there, and we're going to have an easy day. You know, it's our first day. We just arrived. We're going to shoot some B-roll, whatever. And we get up in there, and Seth is introduced by the cashier to Neil Crabtree. And he's one of the Crabtrees. And he says, you know, I never do this, but why don't you guys follow me? I'll take you down to the property. And we're like, what? We just got here. Within 20 minutes, we're going down to the –
oh,
where no one's
my goodness.
Go.
Yep.
Yeah. So we go down, and we're following through. We get down to the property. And the Crabtree property, you know, they've got this giant lake just surrounded by endless wilderness. There's all this legend that happened there. You know, there's multiple sightings, like Lynn Crabtree, famous sighting happened right there. And we're like, where'd that happen? He's like, he points across the lake. It's right over by that big oak tree. Oh my God, you know. And then that was amazing. We filmed there. We got to film. That's the first time any crew has been back there. But and then after we're done filming, the Crabtree family, you know, you guys want to go out in the boats with us? And they take us out on boats. We're in this back swamp that no one's allowed in, and that kind of connects through tributaries to Boggy Creek and stuff. We're kind of having a beer with them and just having it's a summer day. And I was just like, this is the life, man. You know, it's crazy that the things that'll happen to you when you kind of take that step, you know. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can tell you that, you know, and because we're obviously putting together a documentary about things that have happened in Clayton, but I know exactly what mean. It's like you can either be watching or you're in it. It's scary cool when you're in it. And it's like, and when stuff happens, like this older gentleman comes up and drops the biggest bombshell I have ever heard in my life. It's like, what on earth? And it's like, you have to stand there and smile and be polite and not be saying, damn, you just told me the coolest thing I ever heard. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's great. But anyway, I think we all, those of us that are out there investigating and creating projects and things. I think we all have the same experiences, and I think I've just found that out here tonight with you. I mean, it's been wonderful. Now, something very important is you are working on a new project, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, we're doing the new one. I think it's, what is this, the ninth film now? No, sorry, this is the eighth one. The Momo's gonna be the ninth. But yeah, we're doing Terror in the Skies right now. Comes out here in a couple of weeks on June 7th. And this one is about Thunderbirds. You know, these giant birds that people have been seeing over the centuries in the state of Illinois.
Oh, they're
so you've
real.
Got,
they're real for sure, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got the, you know, you've got all kinds of different kind of reports happening. You've got the Thunderbirds, which were basically these giant kind of condor eagle looking birds. And then you've got winged humanoid type creatures. You've got, you know, we've got legends in the movie about like the Piassaw bird is that big legend, Native American legend of this kind of giant bird, man beast thing that would eat, you know, people from the tribe, and then, you know, they ended up teaming up and killing this thing, and then they painted this big mural that's still there to this day. I believe it was destroyed in the 1800s, and then they repainted it recently, but you can still see it in Alton, Illinois today. So there's these amazing Native American legends in the film, and then we also talk about the Lawndale case of this, from the 70s, where this little boy was picked up by this giant thunderbird and almost taken off. Luckily, the bird dropped him, and we talk about the third part of the film, we talk about the Chicago Mothman case. I don't know if you've been hearing about this over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what.
Oh, Mothman. Yeah.
I tried to do a little bit of research. I called that fella. He was not real nice to me. He didn't like.
Who's that?
You know, it's funny. I forget his name, but he was the guy that's kind of in charge of it. And I found this is a weird thing. People do not like my Southern accent.
Yeah.
They do not.
I
mean, I let me tell you something. I try to go to Canada. They want to investigate my car like I'm a terrorist. I'm serious.
Wow.
They think something's wrong with somebody. Something. God, there's my. You know, with as much education as I have. I'm sorry. I'm still from the South. People do, outside of the South, unless you're in England. Now in England, they love my accent. But outside of the South. And this fellow in Chicago, I mean, I still have my notes, but he just wasn't willing to talk about it or anything with me. I mean, the word's hateful. And I think it was probably because I was calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and all that stuff. But that's okay. Hey, look, you guys need, as long as you guys are going to investigate it, that's all that matters. Now, don't you have – you sent me a couple of clips of some music from from this upcoming film. Let's listen to them. Let's talk about them. I've got three. I coded one as Frontier and one as Discovery and one as Lawndale.
Yep.
Let me play one and then tell us. Let's do all three of them. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's check them out. This is, by the way, this is the first time I think I'm showing anybody publicly in the new music. So,
well, we are honored. So, which one do you want me to play first?
Let's start with Frontier. This is a cue that opens the movie. And I don't want to give too much of the way the specifics, but you know, you have, this is a cinematic opening, unlike anything we've ever done where, and we're kind of having a monologue. Lyle Blackburn narrated this one as well. So Lyle's talking about, some of the points of the film, which we'll get into in some of the other cues, but this kind of opens it and it kind of sets the tone. So you're not going to hear any of the spooky music in this that comes later, but you'll get this one.
Okay. Well, here is Frontier.
Thank you.
Bravo, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely brilliant. Tell us, man, a little bit more. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so that one is, like I said, it's the opening scene. And I'm trying to think of a way to kind of describe it without giving away what kind of happens. But it's a cinematic scene. Like, normally we do the documentary, and obviously we shoot in a cinematic style, but this one's kind of there's an opening monologue there. And Seth, he was really pressing me a lot for emotional music with this. Again, it's about thunderbirds, these giant birds, but underneath is this kind of a message of kind of the dying Midwest, these small towns that are, like we talked about earlier, that are kind of on their way out. The downtown areas are suffering financially, and the people are going out of business, these kind of things. And so there's this overall look at that topic underneath kind of this overall spectrum of the Thunderbird. And so the music needed to be more and more emotional throughout, and he kept, pressing with that. And so you'll hear in some of the subsequent cues here that, I used a lot of these kind of female vocals. With that, we had the strings and the acoustic guitar. So there's a lot of kind of emotion in this score, and it's not just a scary, spooky thing, although there's some of that later, of course.
Sure. Well, that's great. Now, are we going to do Discovery or Lawndale next?
Let's do Lawndale, because this is right along with what I was saying. This is one of the main kind of themes of the movie. It goes over the Lawndale case I talked about, where the boy was picked up by the bird. But around that case is a lot of this monologue about the Midwest. And so you'll hear in this kind of the sadness and the emotion that Seth was really wanting to bring out.
Okay, here we go, Lawndale clip. Bravo number two.
Thanks, man.
Wonderful. Tell us about the inspiration for that.
For that one? Yeah. The scene is we're going through this kind of we're leading up to the Lawndale scene where we're going to talk about the kid being abducted by the bird. But again, it's just there's an underlying emotion, even if it's not being stated on screen necessarily, which a lot of it is, but there's a part in the middle of that cue where it goes to the Parter piano. And it's during that section where we're talking about this small town there and what's happening with that. And that was just really an inspiration. It was like, how can we convey this overarching emotion. And this, the female vocals that I use throughout, Seth really loves those. I've used them in a number of the scores for STM as just a way to convey that kind of emotion. Because again, we're looking for something that's not just, we're not just interested in just the spooky tale, just the kind of this fun little dopamine rush or whatever. You know, we're also looking to tell kind of a deeper story and how these towns are affected. So that was kind of the inspiration behind that Lawndale cue.
Yeah. You speak about female vocals. I think my my favorite female vocalist is Doris Troy. And she had a number one hit over here in the U.S. back in the early 60s. And then she went to England. George Harrison met her. She ended up being a producer at Apple Records. And Doris Troy is the voice on Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
Okay, cool.
It's her and nobody else. She has the most incredible voice. And Doris, if you know, I'm sure you're listening because you know I'm your fan. I mean, just female vocals are just incredible. And what they did to Dark Side of the Moon was was just unbelievable. And I'm so glad that you found that out either independently or Doris, maybe she dropped down and said, hey, use some female vocals. No, but she was the stuff. She really was. And just in her memory, because and you got to say Pink Floyd was the first, I believe, the first band that really did that. And I'm so glad to see you've done it. And yeah, they were and they picked the right girl. I mean, she was the absolute best. If you ever just all you have
something
to do is
about
Google up female
vocals.
I've
seen that behind the scenes video, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, again, I'm so glad you did. And if you ever have a chance, check out Doris Troy. She has had a very happy ending. There was a major musical about her life, and she was wonderful. She did. I don't want to say it. I'll say it after the next clip so I can remember the name of the song. Oh, she wrote the song "Just One Look," which was a gigantic hit twice, and then she went to the UK and had that incredible career over there with Apple Records, George Harrison, and with Pink Floyd and several other bands. She even did background works for, of course, the Giants, Led Zeppelin. And so, you know, so anyway, just three cheers to Doris Troy. Thanks for doing that. Now, what is this next clip that we have?
Discovery, this plays over the conclusion scene, the final scene in the movie. So I don't want to give too much away about what happens, but it's kind of just wrapping up. All the STM movies, or most of them anyways, kind of have this, you know, again, there's always an underlying theme. It's not just about the monsters. There's always kind of a theme that we're kind of trying to get across. You know, and I remember Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, we were talking about human curiosity and what drives people to do like you're doing in Georgia and elsewhere, you know, this curiosity. And so, you know, this one has this theme here. So Discovery, it's about that, you know, about these are involved. It's part of the movie's just about the stories or just the witnesses. The investigators that go out and do this and what drives them and that whole story of that whole aspect, you know, John Keel and everyone else. Like, so Discovery is kind of embracing that and plays over the final scene.
All right, let's check it out. Here is Discovery. Some more of the great music from Brandon Daylow.
Thank you.
Well, sir, there's no Bravo there. That's just Academy Award time. That's beautiful.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah,
and
it's interesting to. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, thanks for sharing that with us. Now, what were you going to say? And then I've got two important and good questions for you. What were you getting ready to say?
No, I was just going to say it's cool to show it to people. You know, we do these things and they're released a few months later, so it's always fun to finally get to show people what we've been up to a little bit. So I appreciate
Absolutely. You are welcome. I mean, it's a real privilege to get to listen to this. I hope people will enjoy it. Now, here's my first question. What are your major inspirations, composers or whatever? What are your inspirations for creating this music?
See, I always get really inspired by people who are really experimental with what they do, meaning like, you know, somebody like Imogen Heap. I don't know if you're familiar. She's a kind of a pop, indie pop singer, electronic singer from England. And I remember watching her video blogs during the creation of her albums. And she's always doing these crazy experiments and, you know, hitting on this and creating this instrument from this weird electronic thing. And, you know, and then when I moved to LA, I got really into the modular synth community here. Modular synths, for those unfamiliar, like these, they were what synthesizers started as back in the 60s or 50s or whatever, you know, these analog, you have to put patch cables and turn knobs and do all this stuff. And there's a big, they're having this resurgence. So I'm fascinated by those guys and what they're doing. And composers like, you know, Hans Zimmer and others who mix, you know, this hybrid sound of the orchestra, the traditional orchestra, but then you have these electronic sounds as well. So I'm very inspired by people who are kind of pushing the envelope with what they do. You know, the Trent Reznors of the world, or, you know, just the list is kind of endless, but I'm inspired by that out of the box creativity and that excitement, like kind of like the childlike passion and excitement with the toys of music, you know?
Exactly. Now comes the tougher question, and this may not be one you care to answer. There are two ways I think that you go about, creating music, because I'm a composer. Number one, you either hear it in your head and write it down, or number two, you fiddle around on a keyboard and create it that way. Which one do you use, or do you use a combination of both, or what?
There's usually a combination of both, but I'll tell you, a lot of my stuff, you know, I don't really know what I believe in terms of the universe being sent in or whatever. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of times where I put my fingers on the keyboard and I'll be trying for like 8 hours and like nothing will come. And then out of nowhere, just you write a melody or whatever. You're like, what, where did that come from? It's something in the universe just jolts a lightning bolt into your finger and writes it for you almost. You can't really describe where that came from or whatever, which is kind of the fear as a composer, because you're always worried that wherever that comes from, someone's going to turn the tap off and you're going to be screwed because you have no control over that. You know, you're just kind of this channel or something.
Right. It's
For
me, it's like 6 a.m. When I wake up and I have something in my head, I have to run and write it down because that's it. That's the day's work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever have those 6 a.m. things?
Oh, I have all the time. And there's, you know, the beautiful iPhone voice recorder app, you know, it's changed, because you're right. You have to get the idea out as soon as it comes to you, or otherwise you'll lose it quickly, very quickly. So I have a melody idea or something in my, you know, and I'm out and not near anywhere. I'll just record it with my voice into my phone. Or if I'm at the computer and I'm recording, I'm recording everything I have, you know. My father's an amazing musician as well, but he doesn't write original music. He puts cover bands and all that kind of stuff, but he's an incredible guy. But I always try to get him to write originals and stuff. And he's like, well, I always forget my ideas. It's like, dude, you have to, as soon as you, if you're on the guitar and you have a little bit of an idea, record it. It doesn't need to be finished. It doesn't need to be perfect. You got to get it out, you know.
You've got to remember it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was reminded that's where a lot of your ideas come from, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good, because I know I've had some of my very best ones. In fact, one that I'm working with a group right now, it came, we'll leave it at that. I'll bang this one out on Scarycast in about 6 weeks. Okay. But yeah, that's
right.
Good. So anyway, you're out there in California, you're having a great time. You're learning. You've got this project, which is coming out in basically a week or so. What else?
Yeah.
What other things are you working on?
Yeah, so I do a lot of other things as well. I'm doing a lot of kind of independent short films. I should be releasing a short film I did for Superba House, this production company out here. It's called Zenith, and it's kind of an indie art film. It's kind of a spiritual struggle. It's an interesting story about this girl who is has her watch breaks and she's trying to get it fixed. And in the process, she's having this kind of spiritual breakdown, and she gets kind of possessed by Quetzalcoatl, and he helps her through this spiritual journey. It's a really interesting short film. So I scored that over the past couple of months while I was working on Terror and some other things. And so that's coming out. I just uploaded it to my distributor literally today. So it should be up. It should be out on all the streaming sites and everything within a week. There's some big things happening with that one. I can't really announce it. I think we have to wait till August or something to announce, but there's some big kind of screenings and stuff. Let's just say that for that stuff. But so yeah, I do a lot of short films and these documentaries. I love like even when I watch TV, I almost never watch fictional stuff. I'm really drawn to the kind of the real life thing. So I do a lot of documentaries, and I do a lot of right now I'm doing some video game stuff. And yeah, so and also right now I'm working on pre-production for Momo, the Missouri Monster, which is the next Small Town Monsters.
Yeah.
I start scoring that next month, and then I'll be really heavily scoring it in July. And I think that'll come out probably in October or so. So they're filming it right now. So I'm doing a lot of kind of interesting research on old monster movies, like classic monster movies and stuff, because this is going to
–
it's interesting because this one is going to be – it's going to be the first one ever where we do kind of a narrative. Half of it's going to be narrative. Half of it's going to be documentary. So we're going to – so I really want to give it that 70s vibe. So I'm doing a lot of research and all that. So it's been fun.
Well, that's great. Well, look, I have really appreciated you being here with us tonight on Scarycast, our Sunday Night Fright. And I hope you'll come back with us. And I hope you'll, as things happen, let me know, and I'll post them on the site because people want to know, and you've got a whole bunch of fans here. I can guarantee you that.
Thanks, man.
And we would like to keep up with what you're doing. And if I can get my little expedition going out there in the dear old West Coast, maybe you can come join us for some of our adventures.
Yeah, that'd be fun, man. I appreciate you let me know what's going on. I'll try to see what I can do.
Well,
I don't get to do it too much. Yeah.
Well, we'll get you out in the field now. I hope we all come back. That's the only thing.
Right.
This field work is dangerous. Now, you know that. It
well,
is.
I mean,
and
people
so,
don't.
Yeah.
I was gonna say
people don't understand
what when you're an armchair researcher, you have a. It's just kind of a thing out there, and it's not really. But then when you get out there in the middle of the night, where people have reported sightings and whatnot, it becomes super real for a minute, and you get kind of. It can get real scary out there. We've had some experiences. So a couple little things here and there, and it can get real spooky.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks, we're getting ready to go to an undisclosed location where there are some very frightening pictures so far. So,
oh, geez.
We'll see what happens, and I'll certainly send a text to my attorney to let him know where I am. But I mean, you know, I hope we all come back. No, this one's going to be scary. It's not exactly a pleasant thing. So, and I wouldn't call this a small town monster. This is an absolute monster. So we'll see what happens. You know, Exactly. And my some of my friends, you know, they talk about some of these adventures that they're getting ready to go have, and they scare me. So I don't know. But anyway, it's been a pleasure having you, Brandon. A lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we're glad to have you on Scarycast. We will have you again. We want to listen to more of your music.
Absolutely.
Now, here's a tough question, and if you can't answer this, that's okay. But will your music for this upcoming film be available by itself on a CD?
It will not be on a physical stream. You can get it on all the digital platforms. You can get it on iTunes or Bandcamp, or
that's what I mean. You know,
yeah.
So it will, the music itself will be available.
That's right. Yeah. As of about a year ago, I've been putting them all out there. You know, that we had physical CDs in the beginning, and then, you know, people aren't buying them that much anymore. So we decided, you know, we're just going to go strictly with the digital now. But yeah, the music will be available, and you can find about that. My website is it's BrandonDalo.com, DALO. So people can find out more information there, and I'm on all the social media sites, and it should be, the music should be up on June 7th, right with the release of the film. So I'm excited.
Well, that's great. Well, look, thanks a lot. We appreciate you being here with us, and we'll talk to you again soon. And this is Dr. John saying thanks for listening to Scarycast, the Sunday Night Fright with Brandon Dalo, very, very talented composer, and working with Small Town Monsters and lots of other things. So, look, thanks a lot, Brandon. I'll see you again soon.
Thanks, man. Sounds good.